You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hi, I'm Steve Chiotakis. LA singer and arts activist Doris Anaí Munoz knew from a young age she was the only member of her family who was in the country legally. She lived in constant fear that her family would be deported. She even came across kids who held anti-immigration views in elementary school.
Since I was a little girl, I was like, wait, can't they see that, like, my parents are working really hard? Like, can't they see that, like, my brothers came here when they were kids and they went to, like, kindergarten here through graduating high school? Like, why don't they understand that, like, this is our home? Like, they're just regular people. And that's all I wanted everyone who was, like, anti-immigration to get.
Now, that's one reason she said yes to participating in a new documentary called Mija that's going to be released on Disney Plus next week. Now, this film centers on Munoz and another daughter of immigrants as they follow their dreams while feeling the pressure to provide for their families. KCRW's Andrea Bautista sat down with Munoz and the director of Mija for a one-on-one about the film.
Doris Anaí Munoz will always remember October 20th, 2015. It was the day her worst fear came true. She was studying for her music industry class midterm at Cal State Fullerton.
And all of a sudden, I get this call from my mom that my dad dropped off Jose at the immigration center for, like, a routine visit. And que lo sorprendieron y que lo llevaron, you know. It was supposed to be a routine visit. And they ended up surprising him with handcuffs on the first bus to Tijuana.
Her older brother, Jose, had been deported to Tijuana, Mexico, leaving behind his wife and two children.
And I just collapsed. Like, I just fell to the floor in disbelief and sobbing.
Munoz says as horrible as that experience was, it pushed her to work even harder. She felt like she couldn't waste the opportunity she had to succeed in this country. She set all that determination towards her dreams of working in the music industry. She juggled an internship at RCA Records and at School Night, a live music series in Hollywood. She fell in love with the adrenaline of putting on a show and supporting a new artist. She thought she got a lucky break when an internship at Columbia Records landed her a job as a tour manager just months before graduating from college. But as quickly as she got the job, it was gone.
And I just learned my first lesson in the music industry that nothing is stable.
It was a setback for Munoz. She worked temp jobs for months until one day.
February 2017 is when I got the idea to start Mija Management. And I was like, you know what? If no one's going to give me a full-time job, then I'm going to create it for myself.
With a business partner, she started co-managing a few local artists. She also organized a concert to raise money for a lawyer to resume her parents' green card applications. Trump had just been inaugurated into office, and she worried about keeping her parents safe. The concert quickly became popular thanks to coverage from Vice. But her big get was a kid from Hawthorne known as Cuco.
Realistically, I can't leave now, but I'm okay as long as you keep me from going.
He already had a fan base, and with Munoz in charge, within a year, he went from performing backyard shows to selling out venues and performing at Coachella. By 2019, her hard work paid off. Cuco signed a seven-figure deal with Interscope Records, and Munoz was making a salary she never imagined.
I was, like, finally able to, like, move on my own and, you know, not have to have a roommate and, like, help provide for my parents and have space to, like, host holidays. And yeah, it was life-changing for me.
Munoz's work with Cuco caught the attention of record labels, magazines, and newspapers. It also caught the eye of documentary filmmaker Isabel Castro. Castro had worked on immigration stories in the past. As she looked into Munoz's life, she felt there was a story to tell, one that didn't just focus on the trauma of immigration.
I wanted to make something that felt like a story that I had wanted to see when I was younger, and one that not just talked about the story of immigrating to this country, but also the story of what it meant to be the child of immigrant parents and the really nuanced and kind of complex emotions that went along with that.
When Munoz was approached by Castro to be the subject of a documentary, she was apprehensive. But she came to a realization.
If we were chosen to, like, tell our story, then, like, we have to, like, it's like being obedient to, like, your calling. You know, el llamado es el llamado. And we just felt like us sharing our story will then help so many families that, like, have struggled the way that we have.
No spoilers, but the documentary takes place after Munoz's brother, Jose, was deported and shows the family coping with that trauma. It also shows the highs and lows of her career in the music industry and the guilt she feels as the only American-born member of her family. Here's a clip from the film.
Las dos tenemos trauma when it comes to this, and I know it's big fear. Are you really gonna make it, you know? Like, this gut feeling like I haven't felt since I first started all of this with Kupo and Duke.
The film first premiered at Sundance in January of this year. But Munoz's favorite experience was the premiere at the Los Angeles Latino International Film Festival at Grauman's Chinese Theater.
It gave me chills, you know, to think of, like, all of, like, the legends that have, like, walked those steps leading into that theater. But this time, like, it was us, you know. It was people that looked like me, that looked like my primos, like my friends.
And next week, the film will be available to stream on Disney+. Munoz hopes children of immigrants will feel seen. But she also hopes the film leads to real immigration reform.
Where's the path to citizenship? Like, at Joe Biden, at Kamala Harris, like, we're speaking to y'all. Like, someone take us to the White House. Like, I have a message for you, you know, because we're waiting.
In the meantime, Munoz has been hard at work building her own career as a musician. Earlier this year, she released her debut EP called Aprendiendo por las Malas, or in English, Learning the Hard Way. For KCRW, I'm Andrea Bautista.
Straight ahead, media analysis from LA's favorite weatherman. That's yours on the other side of this. Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. So, what do you do after more than a half century on radio and television, most of it perched, in front of a map showing sunny skies and surf advisories across California?
These are current numbers. We're in the low 70s inland. We're in the mid and upper 60s on the coastal.
What our guest today did is he turned his green screen of satellites and weather radar, grabbed a simple microphone, joined a radio network veteran, and started a podcast about the arts of communication.
Welcome to MediaPath. I'm Louise Palenker.
And I'm Fritz Coleman.
We are the podcast that guides you towards shows and books and other worthier podcasts.
Now, in their podcast, radio veteran Louise Palenker and NBC weather legend Fritz Coleman dive into the media and what's going on in the ether, on the air, even on the page. A lot of it centered right here in Southern California. Welcome to you both.
So happy to be here, Steve, and meet you in person after knowing you all these years.
All these years, Fritz, and thank you for coming to the radio station. Louise, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for flashing our lives before our ears. That was just...
It was good.
You're a radio veteran, as I mentioned.
Yes.
You co-founded Premier Networks, which is a big deal here in L.A. Fritz, you were obviously a TV... I'd say juggernaut.
You can call me a juggernaut.
Can I say juggernaut?
I think he's a treasure.
He is an L.A. treasure for sure.
Yes.
I don't imagine that either one of you had much of a Venn diagram, though, right? Like, did you overlap? Where did you find each other?
We met at a local playhouse where my friend Sharon Lee took me to see Fritz's play, It's Me, Dad. And we started talking about other TV things and possibilities and just kind of pitching ideas and standing around the lobby. And then we went into NBC where he worked and pitched some of our ideas. And we've just been working together ever since. We just really got along.
It's so funny, Fritz, because you have done so many things, right, in addition to your weather duties at KNBC, that it's like, is the weather so, I don't know, laissez-faire? What's another term? Is it so dull here in Southern California that you have time to do everything else?
Let me answer your question by saying I was hired out of the Comedy Store. The news director, this is a true story. The news director of Channel 4, may he rest in peace, Steve Antonetti, and his wife came to see my show at the Comedy Store with a friend of mine that worked at NBC. And on stage, I had done a little anecdote about having been in Armed Forces Radio and Television in the Navy and being forced to do the weather against my will and not knowing anything about it.
Yeah.
And after the show was over, I got to meet this guy, and he said, well, it was very amusing. He said, this is an odd question, but do you have any desire to come to NBC4 and do some vacation relief weather for me? I need a guy to fill in on weekends and fill in for vacations for the main weather people. And I said, you know that I don't know anything about weather. He said, perfect. There's no weather in California. This will work out great. But I auditioned. I got the job. I did weekend fill-ins for 2 years. And then my predecessor left, and I was bumped up to the main job. And I retired 2 weeks shy of my 40th anniversary.
All the while still doing stand-up comedy,
all
right?
Doing stand-up, 2-3 shows a week.
Let's play a bit. This is one of my favorites.
The job with the fewest perks in the news business, the weatherman. Sports guy, Kareem's house for barbecues on the weekend. The weatherman gets to go outside. If you ever want to go out there, I know everyone out there, I'll get you right out, no waiting. There's no bad weather here because God doesn't think California people can deal with it emotionally.
Wow, I hadn't heard that in a long time.
Louise, you did stand up too, right?
Yes, I've dabbled in pretty much, let's just say a lot of things I do marginally.
All here in L.A.
Sure, sure.
The thing about this podcast and that you know got me sort of thinking about, you know, this is fascinating to me because L.A., you are in this town where everything happens, right?
Mm, yeah.
Am I right about that?
Like, oh, yeah.
And I always think I'm fortunate to be on the radio in a place where so many wheels are turning at the same time, whether in the certainly in the entertainment business, but in many other facets as well. And I wonder, is that the reason why it's very L.A.-centric?
I think we're here in this warehouse of talent of all kinds, acting and producing, and it's the show business mecca. So it's easy to get people to come on our show that people know. And that's what makes it wonderful. You know, we're boomers and we do kind of a woke boomer presentation there.
And what does that mean? What does woke boomer mean? So is it like okay boomer or?
No, I just kind of made up the term because there's so many podcasts. It's like magazines, right? You go by the magazine stand and most of them you're thinking, who buys that? Yeah. You know, who needs like a Gear Shift magazine? Okay. But, you know, somebody enjoys that. So with podcasts, I think you can pick a lane. And for us, woke boomers is just people on the more liberal side of things who are in our age group.
Is it freeing for you, Louise, the fact that, okay, you co-founded Premiere and you had to sort of stay in a certain lane and you couldn't be Louise Palenker who is able to speak her mind. Is it freeing to you to be able to do that now?
Oh, absolutely. It's so much fun to just be able to build your own show. You know, in podcasting, you're the writer, producer, director. It's kind of like I love making documentary films, and it's you can make your own movie. You can pick up your phone and we have the tools on our computers. We can create what's in our imaginations. And it used to be you just didn't have the wherewithal or know enough people to make that happen. So I think for creatives, the internet age and the technology age is just absolutely fascinating. We get to build.
And it's a lot more freeing for me because I could only do broadcasts or presentations outside of Channel 4 if it had to do with the marine layer,
yes.
Climate change, fact or fiction. So this gave me a chance to, you know, show a three-dimensional side to myself, both politically and culturally. So it's been a lot. It's been very freeing for me.
Is the
Rich gets to have opinions.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is the marine layer fact or fiction? Is it?
No, the marine layer is very real.
It's very real.
Morning clouds and fog, hazy afternoon sun from April to October. What was the question?
The question was, when and where can we hear both of you?
It's wherever you are.
Yeah, you can find us on MediaPathPodcast.com. That's our homepage. All of our 107 recorded episodes are there. We're everywhere. Your podcasts are distributed free.
What's the weather going to be like?
I have no idea. Look on your phone. That's what I tell people when they say, what's the weather? I say, look on your phone. I'd love just to be a victim of the weather now instead of a deliverer of the weather information.
Fritz Coleman, Louise Palanker, their new podcast is called Media Path. Thanks to you both for coming on today.
We appreciate having a chance to talk to you and your many fans. Steve, thanks for the community service you provide.
Thank you.
Steve, you are the finest gentleman. Thank you so much for having us.
Coming up, arts without the stigma of art. Gathering artists for a show that caters to everyone. That's right after this short break. Back now with even more of Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. The art world can be hard to navigate. High prices, a lingo all of its own, fancy galleries that don't always feel super welcoming. Well, that's where Other Places Art Fair comes in. Created to be a more accessible way to experience art, they're a pop-up fair with an egalitarian flair. And with me to talk about what they're cooking up this weekend on Saturday and Sunday in San Pedro is Other Places founder Kay Natel. Kay, welcome.
Hello.
We appreciate you coming in. You come from the art world, right?
Yes. I come from an arts background, a fine arts background. I have an MFA from CalArts, and I'm a practicing fine artist. But I also am a curator, a gallerist, a dabbler in all things art.
Why do you think that art can be so, or at least appear so, inaccessible?
Well, I think it's like any profession, really. You know, there's a special language. There's a secret handshake. You know, maybe it's something about wanting to protect your turf a little bit or something. I've always thought that was really counterproductive.
I understand that talking to your family about what you were working on was part of that too. Like, right? Like.
Well, yeah, I think we have these moments as practicing artists when we step out of our tiny little art world back into the public realm. And, you know, you'll be talking about something that, you know, or you'll use a word like you use all the time in these art conversations, and you'll see your family just looking at you kind of like you're insane.
What does that even mean?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, those moments are really humbling. And I think you can either, you know, be dismissive of those moments, or you can lean into them and just say like, oh, you know what, like this thing I do needs to be a little more clear, needs to be a little more open, needs to be a little more friendly.
So how do you do that for the masses, though? It's one thing to talk to your family about this, right? But then to take this specific, right, the specific thing with, like, as you say, the secret handshake,
sure,
and make it available to everybody, to other places, as you call it.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, I think, like, you know, OPAF, Other Places Art Fair, was, like, the culmination of that. I mean, it's a public fair in a public space, open to the public. It's not trying to crack the art market. It's not trying to be anything other than a gathering space for other places.
There are art fairs, to be sure, that are open to the public that don't require an admission charge, you know, things like that.
Sure.
Right?
Yes.
So what makes this different, do you think?
Well, this art fair, I would say simply, the focus isn't on selling art. You know, I started this fair because I was doing project spaces out of my house in San Pedro after I graduated from CalArts and had my MFA. I was down in San Pedro. I had a flagpole out in front of my house, and I decided, okay, like, it's just sitting there empty. Let me ask some artists to make flags for it and show art on the flagpole to my neighborhood, essentially. So I was doing that kind of thing and meeting other people who are doing that. And it's a really generative practice. I mean, it's like you take money out of the equation and you take the stress of, you know, being a business out of the equation, and you get kind of back to the core principle, or what we as artists were taught is the core reason why you make art, which is just like, you have to. It's a creative endeavor that, like, that's how you speak.
You're taking the marketplace out of it.
Yeah. And you know, at first it was just like a tongue-in-cheek kind of experiment. It's just like, what if you had an art fair where people didn't care about selling art So we keep the cost down for participants too, for that reason too. It's barely nothing to participate in it, and that's by design also.
What kind of stuff are they showing? I see kites, by the way, which intrigues me. I love how kites are a part of this.
Yeah, there'll be some galleries that are just showing, you know, paintings and sculpture in the you know, classical sense of the term. But we also, this year, we're having a sort of like annex that's a kite show that's organized by two of the participants. And we invited 20 plus artists from around the country to make kites. There's entryways into it. You know, you go there and you will see paintings, you will see sculpture, you will see books and things that you recognize as art objects. But then the hope is that also then you're having an experience, because then you're stumbling upon something else. Like, there is someone who's doing a project involving mealworms that eat styrofoam. So you have something like that, that's just like this really weird thing, which is in a weird way, it's what people think artists do. Like, you know, it's just like make crazy work with mealworms and styrofoam or something. But it's in this setting where it's outside. It's you know, near the ocean. It's a beautiful day in the park, and you can enter into that space because you're not feeling like it's being presented in this way that, like, you need to speak the language to understand it.
Certainly sounds like a lot of fun. Very interesting for sure. Okay, Natel, thank you so much for coming by the studio and talking with us.
Thank you so much.
Other Places Art Fair runs this weekend, Saturday and Sunday from 12 to 6 at and around the Angels Gate Cultural Center in San Pedro. More information at the website, kcrw.com/GLA. That's going to do it for us today, but a reminder that we're still in the throes of the KCRW Fall Fundraising Drive. And just to let you know, in recent years, we have tried out different links and formats for these drives, and we are happy to say that this one is short and to the point. So get your contribution in today, if you can, to get it done early and to get it done and out of the way. Think about all the KCRW you use on the regular, whether it be Morning Edition from NPR and, of course, locally with Cherry Glazer here in the studio, whether the music shows like Morning Becomes Eclectic with Anthony and Novena, or even episodes of this program, Greater LA, on the regular. Think of all of the KCRW you use, put a dollar value to it, and give us a little something to keep it going, won't you? You bring the magic to KCRW by helping us to create and to curate and spread the unique stories and the music of Southern California. We can't do it without you. And to make it even more enticing, today only, give now for your chance to see electronic music superstars Jamie XX and Caribou live at the Hollywood Bowl from a VIP box. If you donate by midnight tonight, you're automatically entered to win. KCRW.com/give. KCRW.com/give. And good luck. Next week, Damn the Beavers. No, really, Damn the Beavers. They do so much as nature's water rerouters. Can saving them and helping them thrive actually help save the planet, i.e. us? That's next week on GLA. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthews, Sonia Geist, J.C. Bold, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, and Holly Adams all help shape this evening's episode. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your ears. Have a great night.